From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for February 28th, 2020. Let's start with something a little different. Next Friday, the Milwaukee Symphony will feature the music of David Bowie. I wonder if they'll do Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars. Well, back on Earth, the Bucks are home tonight with the Thunder and Wednesday with the Pacers, and in just 27 more days, it's the Brewers' home opener. All right, with the cops in hot pursuit and speeds reaching a blistering 20 miles per hour, a 68-year-old Pennsylvania man was charged with multiple traffic offenses, but speeding wasn't one of them. But the 68-year-old was charged with being high on pot. We didn't see this coming. Here's a bit of weird news from the UK. Genetic hereditary tests are revealing that 1 in 10 people in the UK, that's 1 in 10, is mistaken about the identity of their father. That's a lot of Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker moments at a family reunion. And we have a fun fact to wrap up this part of the podcast. You all know those Made in China stickers that we find on nearly everything. Well, the stickers are made in North Korea. In the studio today, we have Brian Kill, Mark Amateus, Paige Ratke, Joel Driesing, and wrapping up a miserable week, here's Kyle Tedding.
Well, thanks for a little bit of a laugh there, Max. Obviously, a pretty rough week and really, quite a bit, I think, to talk about as far as maybe how we handle some of that. But, I think that the big news, you see the volatility index spiking throughout the week, and couldn't be more evident than looking at the returns on any of the major indexes. You've got now a full-blown correction in the S&P 500, a full-blown correction in the Dow Jones, and a full-blown correction on the year in the NASDAQ as well. And so, I think pretty significant market moves this week. The NASDAQ down 10.5% just this week, closing at 85.67. That's down a little more than 1,000 points, down 1,009 points for the week. The S&P 500 down 11.5% this week, closing at 29.54, down 384 points for the week. And you've got the Dow Jones Industrial Average closing today at the bell, down 357 points today and 3,583 for the week, down 12.4% as it closed at 25,410. That's a quick look at the week. Obviously, the big news this week, and maybe what I think is necessary to be the entire focus of this podcast, is just the huge correction now that we've seen in such a short period of time, and certainly correction's not unusual. You see them in, the majority of annual periods or the majority of years for the market. And yet, despite that, full-year market returns typically are positive. I think the thing that's caught many of us by surprise now, Brian, is how quickly this one has come on. And certainly a lot of reasons why it's come on so quickly. But, I think, you look at peak to trough now down a little more than 12.75%, and that's a significant move in a week. And so I wonder, what are you hearing from clients now? What are you telling clients now? And how do we get beyond this week and look ahead?
Well, I think, first of all, leading up to this week, we've talked for months now, Kyle, about growing risks and perhaps valuations getting a little bit stretched and the need for people to, to be a little bit careful with their portfolios with risk as we head into this next phase of the cycle, So I think for anybody to think that this was surprising, I think, really, really shouldn't have been, So had you prepared, had you had an appropriate level of risk going into this, then you just need to, mostly do nothing, right? I mean, to be honest, because if you get out, then you got to get back in, and that creates a whole nother set of challenges. And if you do it wrong, then you've damaged yourself forever. But back to the topic of, for me, I've been through a number of these, being one of the older guys in the room, and they always kind of feel this way, right? They always kind of feel like there's something that's potentially going to get a whole lot worse, in this case, the coronavirus. But you have to stop and ask yourself, I think, how much worse are things in your mind today than they were a week ago Friday before this all began? And certainly, I think it's fair to say that this coronavirus is going to have an impact. It's going to have, an effect on earnings. I think it's hard for me at this moment in time anyway to process that it's 15% worse than it was a week ago. So I think, let's kind of see how this plays out. I think be patient with your portfolios. That's why you have bonds to get you through this stuff. but also be kind of wary of folks that are just trying to create a panic because we're a long way from that yet.
I think certainly a lot to unpack there, Brian. I think first and foremost, though, as we look at this particular virus and we look at how early in the game it is for just understanding what the long-term implications are going to be. And so, you know, you talk about all these economic forecasts that are built on, well, what if this happens and what if this happens? And then the subsequent earnings forecasts that depend on, okay, well, what if this happens in the economy? And what it really boils down to is that right now we're putting a lot of bad data into those models. We don't really know what the impact is going to be. And so, you know, if you talk to anybody who does any kind of economic forecasting or modeling for a living, the results, the models themselves are only as good as the data that goes into them. And so I don't think right now we're dealing with so many unknowns and so many variables that, you know, as you say, is it 15% worse than it was a week ago? Probably not. The challenge is that we just don't have a good way to model yet what it really is going to look like. And so, you know, I'm fully on board with that. I think part of it is uncertainty, and part of it, I think, is that we're going to know more as time goes on.
Well, and you think this thing originated in China, right? And how much do we ever trust what's coming out of there anyway, you know? So I think, you know, it's just
made in China stickers don't even come from there.
Yeah, they don't even come from there. That's so funny, by the way. But yeah, I think, you know, there's how you feel about it and what you do about it to some degree are two different things. And I think people would be well advised to trust that bond portion of their portfolio, why it was there to begin with. And in that, it'll get them through this stuff as we find out more about the situation, you know.
Yeah, I think you both really hit the nail on the head with that. The stock market's worst enemy is uncertainty. So like you said, Kyle, you have these institutional money managers trying to model out the impact of this virus. And really with all of the unknowns that we have the bad data. It's just very, very difficult for them to do that. And even if they do get some data, they put that into their models and suddenly a speculative report comes out that puts the whole thing out of perspective. You know, one thing that we could do is compare this to what happened back in 2003 with the SARS outbreak. So at that point in time, the market actually also fell around 13%, which ultimately recovered, but only after we had a good idea of how the global economy might recover. Now, this is a little bit different because back in 2003, China wasn't as integrated into our global supply chain. But again, once we start to see this die down and we start to have a little bit more of a clear picture of how this might spread and how we might stop it, and we can start modeling those things out, the volatility should cease.
You know, I think you point out how big of a role China plays now compared to 2003 and the first SARS. And I think that one of the bigger challenges that we face right now is as we've transitioned to a services-based economy, and a lot of those services are travel, whether it's the aircraft we produce from Boeing that then gets sold to Chinese airlines or to Asian airlines more broadly, or whether it's selling travel packages to Disney World to those Chinese tourists or to Asian tourists more broadly. And I think this is going to have an impact, and so clearly, right to point out that, yeah, things are a little different this time around, but there's at least a jumping off point. And again, I don't think we nearly know enough yet to say here's what that long-term impact is going to be. You know, I think one of the big pieces that has kind of stood out to me is the flip side of stocks declining is that bonds are doing exactly what we would have expected. And so, you've got the yield on the 10-year Treasury dropping pretty significantly this week. We had closed last week at 147, and now closing at the bell today at 1.13%. That's in just a week, a pretty significant move to the other side. And investors need to remember that bond prices move inversely to yield. And so I think you've seen a pretty drastic shift in your bond portfolio to the upside, even as your stocks sold off. And so, Mark, probably an important reminder for investors that, your bonds aren't selling off necessarily the way your stocks are.
Yeah, Kyle, you know, so much of investing is maintaining the right psychology about it. And investors need to remember that their portfolio, at least our clients' portfolios, aren't the S&P 500. They're not the Dow. They're not the NASDAQ. You know, give or take, if you've got 50 to 60%, let's say, of your portfolio in stocks and the rest in bonds, you're down about half of what the market is down. That's no fun, but it's not, you can't look at the news and see that the Dow is down 10, 12% or whatever and think, oh my goodness, that's my portfolio. Far from it. And I think also, everybody's probably pretty much the same. and that is that they look at anything below the high point in their portfolio is a loss. And that's the wrong way to look at it. And you've got to kind of train yourself. That's a point in time. You know, if you were up 15 to 20% last year in your portfolio, and now you're down 3 to 4, okay, you certainly didn't lose money. You did awfully well. And, you know, as long as nothing has changed in your time frame, in your financial life, if you're in it for the long term, you still have the same goals for your portfolio. The worst thing you can do is make a panic decision, make an emotional decision in a time like this, and make some big change in your portfolio.
You know, Kyle, I do think one of the things that feels different to me as things evolve or whatever is these things do seem to happen in a more compressed, you know, there's a greater level of volatility in the short term than there used to be, you know, and I think you know, there's a lot of derivative trading recently. And so there's, you know, not only the idea of program trading and things run by computers, but people betting on the other side of the trade too. And so when these things do happen, they do have a tendency, I think, to be, you know, significantly more abrupt in a shorter period of time. So I think that'll be interesting to see as we move past this, how quickly we recover, because some of those forces then work for us that have been working against us in the last few days.
Yeah, Brian, it's not just algorithmic trading, but the rise of index funds has created a number of very crowded trades. If all you're doing is buying a market cap weighted index, the largest stocks or by market cap are going to be the ones that are worst hit in these kinds of sell-offs. And we've seen that a little bit, especially early on in this sell-off, where it was some of the bigger names that had been hit the hardest. And so, you know, I think you look beyond what's market capitalization say I should invest in, and you look at, okay, what's the underlying investment thesis for this, and what does that mean, and how should I invest in that regard? And I think when you look at some of the active managers out there who maybe are more defensive in the way they position, not necessarily buying traditional defensive stocks, but buying stocks that maybe have a little bit more of a story as to why they're going to stick around, they've held up in this last week a lot better. And certainly as we, you know, go down this path as far as we have to go. And again, that is to say that, yeah, this sell-off's been bad so far. It could get worse. It could get better. But there's going to be managers out there who are looking for opportunities. There's going to be managers who hold up better than what the market holds up. Even though they're fishing out of the same pond, they're just, you know, they're pulling out the big ones only. They're not pulling out every little fish they can get. And so I think important for our investors to remember that there's plenty of opportunity even amidst this. And so, you know, it's not simply as easy as saying, yeah, everything's down a bunch. You know, Mark, I was particularly struck by your mention of kind of, you know, high watermarking portfolios, or kind of setting this idea that, you know, the best it ever was is where it's supposed to be. And it reminded me, you know, of a trip I took to Santa Fe, New Mexico, and out to Albuquerque to walk through Bandelier National Monument. And they've got signs on all the trees that say, here's how high things can flood, because it's in the middle of, I think, what's a flash flood area. And you walk through there, and there's no water in the riverbed there. It's perfectly dry, but they tell you, oh, yeah, but when the rains come, the water can get, you know, over your head on these trees. And I think if all you did was look at those signs and go, that's where the water's supposed to be, you'd be very confused about what's going on right now. And so I think an important lesson that you have for investors is, you know, you can't simply say this is what it's supposed to be worth. You have to say, here's what it's worth right now. It could be less, it could be more. But, you know, what ultimately do we have here, and what ultimately do we think it should be worth? And I think you look at the incredible returns we had in 2019. We're still up 4% year over year on our money. The S&P is up 4% year over year. So, yes, this decline has been significant, but still a positive return over the trailing 1 year. And yeah, it's only 4% again, but here we are a year later, and, you know, still a positive number.
Well, and the other part, you know, maybe lesson from the story you just told is to be prepared for the worst, right? And we always talk about that. The time to be prepared for something like this, or to get prepared for it, is to always be prepared for it. Structure your portfolio so that you don't lose sleep at night, no matter what comes down the pike, and you won't be tempted to make one of those emotional decisions. So yeah, investors need to understand this is, at this point, a very normal correction. Happens very often that you have a 10% plus correction. The speed of this one, I think, really caught people by surprise. And if you will, the novelty of it, with it being associated with, you know, an unknown virus, But from an economic standpoint, from an investing standpoint, right now, this is pretty run-of-the-mill.
Paige, one of the big things that's jumped out in the last week is, you know, I mentioned the strong returns in bonds, but I think the one exception there is some of the lower quality stuff. And we've stressed on this podcast the need for higher quality bonds. We've seen high yield spreads go from, you know, roughly a third of long-term averages. Now, you know, at the end of the day today, we'll have popped back up right around where the long-term average is for high yield spreads. And so, you know, what does that tell investors, I guess, about, you know, how they should be positioning their bond portfolio?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing there is just when it comes to bonds, you have to ask yourself, what role are they playing in your portfolio? Are you holding those bonds because you want to get the highest yield possible? Or are you holding those bonds so that when you have a situation like this where the stock market is significantly down and you're seeing bond portfolios that are still up 2-3%, you know, you want to have some place to draw from in those cases. We've talked a little bit today about the timing of everything. And, you know, one thing to note is even looking at, you know, even if we do enter a bear market territory, which is a 20% drop from the peak, those occur every 3.5 or so years on average. Obviously, there's been a lot longer since the last one now. But then on average, those last around 367 days. So those on average last about a year until you make that money back. So when we're talking to clients and we're saying put 6 months to a year on ice, and then even around 4 years worth of withdrawals in your bonds, you know that you can weather something like that. So that's the real purpose of those bonds in your portfolio rather than reaching for that yield.
You know, I think the lesson for investors in all this, A, is that you want to have a plan before we enter these kinds of environments. The time to take action is not once the sell-off has occurred. The time to take action is, you know, last December when we saw immense returns, when we saw, you know, gains that, you know, candidly were maybe a little overdone. And so, yeah, that ran a little bit into 2020, and we might have thought, oh, maybe we trimmed a little early if we were trimming back in December, which we did for a number of clients. Maybe we thought, yeah, things could get a little better. But the reality is valuations had been stretched, and there weren't a lot of signs that the market needed to run much higher from where it was. That didn't mean this needed to happen. It didn't mean a sell-off was certainly imminent, and I don't think anybody would have called the reason for this sell-off. But we've now seen valuations come back in line. We've now seen you know, I think markets behave the way we would have expected. And if you had a balanced portfolio coming into this, it gave you the ability to say, yeah, I haven't behaved as badly as the markets. But B, it means that you've got a plan going forward as well, that you don't have to do something now to get yourself positioned to where you're in a place where you could do something different if things keep going down from here.
You know, and Kyle, that's just such an important point and a difference, I think, in the way people look at things versus perhaps how they should look at things. You know, if you get to a point where valuations are stretched, that's when you do something. You're not spending your time figuring out how the world's going to change and how that's going to be reflected in changing prices. And I think to some degree we've talked about that for months now. The growth side got a little bit ahead of itself. Okay, if that happens, you pull back a little bit. And again, we wouldn't have known that that would have gotten particularly hit hard during this past week. We're talking about high yield and the abrupt changes in some of the lower credit quality stuff. We've been talking about lightening up on lower credit quality issues for a long time. So again, there's a difference between seeing the landscape and understanding what things can be taken advantage of or avoided, and trying to figure out when those things and how those things are going to happen, because that's the hard part. Nobody ever does that. But I think if you are paying attention to the right stuff and you're active in your portfolio, when you get to these sorts of things, it should give you, A, some satisfaction to know you've done some things in advance, but also some confidence to get you through it.
Yeah, such a great point, Brian. It's not about trying to time those moves. It's about leaning into the areas of opportunity and away from the areas of risk.
Exactly right.
You know, Joel, a couple of good pieces of economic news this week on the housing front in particular.
Joel, how about some good news today, man?
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt. Fed Chairman Powell had a statement this afternoon, just kind of watching the markets, and just the first sentence of it was, the fundamentals of the U.S. economy remain strong. You know, and he acknowledged that, you know, the coronavirus poses evolving risks to the economic activity, and the Fed's going to be monitoring that and you know, act appropriately. But if you look at the U.S. economy, I mean, all of the indicators that we look at every week are still kind of saying the same thing, that we've got moderate growth. We had numbers this week on the second look at the GDP numbers, and it said that we're 2.1% annual growth rate for the economy, and that's not bad. You know, that's still going pretty well. And more importantly, because we always say two-thirds of the economy comes from consumer spending, and we had good numbers on consumer confidence and consumer sentiment. Now, the consumer sentiment numbers, some of those were starting to show some consumers talking about at least mentioning the coronavirus. So, you know, how that affects consumers and their confidence and their willingness to spend, you know, remains to be seen. But from all the things that we're looking at right now, it's kind of the same old, we're trudging along. And as you said, the housing stuff, I mean, we got some good numbers this week that show that the housing market actually might be picking up a little.
Yeah, I think housing is such an important piece of an economy that's driven by the consumer because, as we've said, I think countless times on this podcast, you buy a house, you've got to buy stuff to fill that house. You've got somebody else that's moving into a different house that's got to buy stuff to fill that house. And so it tends to be a, you know, a piece of the economy, I think, that can just kind of have that feedback loop where you get, you know, positive results that aren't necessarily part of other pieces of the economy. You know, industrial on its own doesn't get that kind of positive feedback. And so, you know, I think if we can continue to see some strong economic data, it could be the foundation for, and especially on the consumer front, it could be the foundation for what gets us past some of this uncertainty, likely to persist for a while. I don't think we're going to get answers over the weekend about when this particular pandemic is finally going to end. I don't think we're going to get answers over the weekend that suddenly we have hundreds of millions of vaccines ready and available for this thing. But I think, you know, little by little, we're going to get news out that says, yeah, we've figured this piece out or we've solved this particular problem. And, you know, I think we often talk about the risks of downside. We often talk about the risks of, well, what happens if this is the next shoe to drop? And what happens if, you know, we learn this about the virus? And I think the reality right now is that uncertainty has been the bigger issue. And the more we learn, the more it's going to help to put to rest some of those concerns. And I think help us get back to a place where we're supposed to be in the markets. Well, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. The audience continues to grow. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.